Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to episode 34 of the Pro Wrestling Index here on the Anfield Index Podcast Network. I'm your host, Matt Topolsky, and guess what? We have a very special show this week because I'm not only bringing back my co-commentating colleague from across the pond, but the architect himself is joining us as well. But first of all, before we intro the architect, Mo Chatra, welcome back to PWI, my friend. It's been a minute. We are reunited.
Yeah, not quite a New York minute, but it's been a while. So glad to be back home on the Pro Wrestling Index, and good to be talking pro wrestling and sports entertainment with you, Matt Topolsky.
And we have a lot to get caught up on. And as I said, Mo, we are welcoming back the architect himself, Gags Tandon, is back on the Pro Wrestling Index. Gags, we have a lot to cover. How you doing?
We do, man. But the architect, you know what? It's a bit of an insult to Seth Rollins, you know. I suppose you could compare me to the architect because I'm injuring podcasters, you know. I'm knackering them out. They're talking so much. We're putting so many pods out. Their voices are going. Yes. Yes, I am the architect. I'm destroying podcasting.
You're hitting one podcaster after another with a turnbuckle powerbomb.
That's it. You see, there's haters saying that, but it's far from the truth, just like the Bret Hart situation.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. Save it for the pod, Gags.
Sorry.
Save it for the pod.
Sorry.
Well, listen, we have a lot to get caught up on. So, gents, let's get right into it. Gags, it's been a while since we've had you on the podcast, and a lot has occurred in the realm of professional wrestling, more specifically WWE. Mm. Since the last time you were here, we've had a brand split. Mm. We have two world championships now, one representing the universe, the other representing the lineage of the original WWE title.
I thought you were going to say the Galaxy.
Kevin Owens. Yes, the Galaxy, yes. Kevin Owens is the new Universal Champion.
Wow.
So much has occurred. Why don't you share a little bit of your feelings on all of these different changes, and what are you hyped about most? Because the last time we talked, Daniel Bryan was retiring. It was a somber note then. Much has changed since.
Yeah, I think I'm a big fan of Daniel Bryan, so any kind of reintroduction of him was gonna pique my interest. You know, I mean, that it's not just about him; it's about the whole industry and stuff. And it just seemed a bit bland to me at the time. There wasn't anything going on; it's the same old authority nonsense. And you know, we'll get to something like that with what's going on. You know, obviously on Raw this week a bit later, but there's something different, Matt and Mo. There's something different about everything at the moment. I know the brand split didn't go the way any of us wanted. You know, we all wanted the cruiserweights on SmackDown and this and that, and loads of things that we wanted to be a bit different, and we wanted it to be a bit more the quality shared between the brands, and it just seems a bit top heavy on Raw. But I think it's going to work out. I think with AJ where he is, he needs that brand. I think they need to get him out. They need to make him the top dog. I think they're going towards that. So I do see all the positives. I just see that there's opportunities everywhere now. It just seems that way. I mean, you think about it, Finn Balor coming in and then winning it. And the plan was to push him until he got injured. You know, it's just so different. That's immediately shows you that there's something changed somewhere. Something's gone on. Something's changed. And then obviously Owens now, something's changed. It would have been Roman before. Obviously his ban maybe and all that changed everything. But it doesn't seem that fucking pigheadedness going on. The CWC, it's just changed everything. It's if you are not subscribing to the network right now, you're fucking missing out so badly with NXT and CWC. I think that on its own has just breathed fresh. It's a fresh. Oh God, I can't even speak now, Matt. It's a fresh breath of air. Whatever it is, it's just so fresh. You know, I watch TakeOver and I see Bobby Roode's intro and I just start watching Glorious Bomb fucking YouTube clips and marking out. And then I'm, you know, his entrance, his music, I start watching how they make the music because it grabs me. I listen to Nakamura's music on repeat in the car because it's got me. It's got me now, you know, it's just fucking got me. And like that, little things like that, that's what being a wrestling fan's about for me, is the things that grab you. They have to come out and get you. You can be invested as much as you want, but until something doesn't grab you by the throat and say, you fucking pay attention to this now. And then Nakamura winning it. And, you know, SummerSlam, the only thing I'd say about SummerSlam, it was a good show, but it was just messed up in terms of ordering. They could have fucking sorted that out. That was what I would say about that. But, I mean, I know you covered loads of that before, but I just think there's so much now going forward. And, I mean, I think there's some of the stuff we're going to talk about, obviously, with Raw, SmackDown and stuff coming up with this week, because a lot of it is merged with or submerged with what happened this week, especially, I think, because I watch both shows. And I just feel like there's an elevation of talent going on. And I don't want to talk too much about it, but we can cover it. But if for example, in the Royal Rumble, the last five people are Finn Balor, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Roman Reigns, yes, I said him, John Cena, and who was the other one and Seth Rollins. For me, that seems like a list of champions in there. You know, and we haven't had something like that for a long time. Back in the day, it used to be like, oh, I know it shouldn't compare to the Warriors or Hogan's or Machos and all these people in the Royal Rumbles, but they've actually elevated these people because they've actually worn the belt at some point. Even if it was for a night, they've worn the belt, they're former champions. For now, if these people enter a Royal Rumble or come to that final four, that final eight or whatever, you actually look at it and go, okay, now you're talking. Obviously, Zayn hasn't, but he's had the NXT title. Now you're talking. Anyone that wins that, apart from Reigns, is good. You know what I mean? But yeah, it just seems like something's elevated. And
one thing I would say about that before I turn it over to Mo and kind of get some of your thoughts, Mo, on what we've witnessed in the last few weeks since the last time we got together, is I think WWE has done a much better job in recent months of not only creating stars, to your point, Gags, but also admitting something that they didn't admit prior to that, and that is that there are stars in the independent circuit and bringing them in to WWE, whether it be through the Cruiserweight Classic, whether it be through NXT, whether it be with AJ Styles, bringing him directly to the main roster and putting him in a position where he was basically handed the torch by John Cena at SummerSlam by defeating him clean, which is a big moment for AJ Styles in his career.
Massive.
You know,
he carried it this week.
Yeah, and I think he'll continue to carry the banner because I think SmackDown needs a true champion who is capable of doing that, which I feel Dean Ambrose is not right now. But Mo, let's get your thoughts on some of the things that we've seen over the last few weeks. You know, your impressions on the brand split, what we've seen from Raw and SmackDown, the fallout from SummerSlam, and so forth and so on.
On the whole, I think that what we've seen in terms of what Gag's talking about with all the changes, and there's changes on a variety of fronts as well. It's not just one type of change. It's not just about the influx of new talent. There's a variety of changes, and I'll come on to that. But also, play a bit of devil's advocate after that as well, just to give the counter argument too. Now, in terms of the positives to start with, clearly bringing talents through from NXT like Cass and Enzo, who've been a revelation on the main roster. I mean, they are right now possibly the most overact on either Raw or SmackDown. The reactions they get every time they come out are just phenomenal, almost Attitude Era-like in terms of the crowd pop. So that's really wonderful to see. And we've got what I really like is that we've got a variety of different types of wrestlers. I mean, if we go back 5 or 6 or 7 years, the WWE attitude at the time is very much about talents being very similar to one another. They wanted people to have a similar look, similar physique, similar wrestling style. Now we've got people with a variety of different styles, and it's not just about everyone conforming to this kind of ideal, this kind of utopia about people must wrestle in this way, people must look in a certain way. That seems to have gone, and that's great to see. And we can have a Kevin Owens, and we can have a Neville, and we can have a big Cass, you know, very different types of individuals, Braun Strowman, all be able to fit into this company and still have a role and a purpose. We've seen the production changes. I mean, we talked about how there were certain aspects of the brand split that were disappointing. And for me, one of the more disappointing things was the fact that SmackDown and Raw didn't establish their own distinct identities. There are not enough differences between the two, despite the presentational differences. There aren't enough differences to say this when you turn onto the show immediately, it's SmackDown, beyond the fact it's blue. And same with Raw. You know, there are still a lot of similarities in the way that the product's presented. One is not more adult orientated and one isn't more family friendly. But it is what it is. And, you know, I'm getting used to the fact that, you know, they are similar, but there's still enough differences there for me to appreciate both shows, you know, as different things.
So you don't think that the camera angle changes enough to be different?
That camera crane, it was getting on my nerves the first week, but again, I'm slowly accepting it. And it, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's about 6 feet away from the ring, and it makes a 10,000 seat arena look like 2,000. But you know, it's something I can learn to live with, I guess. But it is what it is. I mean, that's all good. The influx of talent is good. The differences, the variety of characters, gimmicks, styles of wrestling that we're seeing as well. And, you know, as you touched upon Gags with the Cruiserweight Classic, you know, even more types of styles. We've seen the likes of Zack Sabre Jr. with almost a World of Sport British style that you and I saw when we were children in the 80s, Gags. You know, that that's really good to see. And all of these things are positives. Now, I mentioned about playing devil's advocate, and the only flip side I've got to say is that a lot of the changes that we're seeing are very much geared towards smart-type fans like us.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering if all these changes are perhaps at the detriment of the more casual fan base who are perhaps less inclined towards work rates, and smaller guys. That, you know, you've got to bear in mind, for decades now, the WWE fan base was conditioned or brainwashed almost into thinking that wrestlers had to look a certain way, they had to be big, they had to be over 6 foot, they had to have these superhuman physiques, look larger than life. And what they're seeing now are a lot of guys that, you know, if they walk past you in the street, you wouldn't necessarily turn around twice to look at them. You know, in the WWE right now, there's perhaps only, what, 5 or 6 guys that fit that kind of larger-than-life kind of label. And if you look at the ratings, despite the positivity around Raw and SmackDown in recent times, the fact that, you know, generally the in-ring product has been really good recently, the ratings are flat. You know, it's really not had an impact on the ratings. And again, that's doubly disappointing, because there's been no NFL, for example, up against WWE Monday Night Raw. And that's going to change in a couple of weeks with the NFL season starting. So those ratings are going to start going down. So that's my only criticism of how things are panning out, that perhaps, if anything, the WWE is trying to cater to us smart type fans too much at the expense of the more casual fan base that like to see, you know, the big monsters, you know, the Brock Lesnar types, the Braun Strowman types, and are more into entrances and gimmicks and larger than life personas, and care less about the actual matches. So I think there's a balance to be struck, and I think that WWE will work through that. But that's the only criticism I have of what's been going on recently.
Can I ask a quick question? What do you think?
Yes.
I know. I listened to Mo on. I think both of you said it, that you preferred the cruiserweights to go to SmackDown before, you know, before it all happened. But don't you? I mean, I've changed my mind on this. Don't you think, though, that the cruiserweights coming to Raw is going to make Raw? It's the 3-hour show, so having 2 15-minute, say, cruiserweight matches towards the start and the end, maybe actually give it a bit of beef it up, so there's actually some quality wrestling going on, and actually elevate the quality of the show, because it becomes a little bit of a wrestling show. So the stuff you're talking about, where these big guys out there, they can carry on doing that, but then they've also got that fan base covered, the technical, because there's loads of people watching the Lucha Underground, all this type of stuff. They want to see something different, something fast, something new, you know? So don't you think that on the flagship, it's actually probably a better place, and it elevates them? Maybe one day we'll get a world champion out of that. Who knows?
What I would say to that is, and I think at the time when Mo and I talked about it, I mean, we were looking at it strictly from a standpoint, and obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, Mo, because I'm not speaking for Mo, but for myself personally, when we looked at the rosters that came out of the draft, and certainly when you look at, like, for example, one of the matches that we saw on SmackDown this week featured the Headbangers, who had returned to WWE for the first time in 16 years to wrestle Rhino and Heath Slater. So it's clear, based on booking like that, that SmackDown is still in desperate need of talent to fill a 2-hour show, when in fact Raw has an abundance of talent to fill a 3-hour show. However, I will agree with you now, Gags, that based on how these shows are developing, that Raw would actually be better suited, I think, for the cruiserweight, simply because they can fill that second hour with cruiserweight action in the same way that WCW Nitro did when they went to a 3-hour format. So I think that would be the best place for it. But at the time when we were looking at the SmackDown draft and the results from the draft, the roster that they had, that the cruiserweights would probably be a better fit on SmackDown. I still think SmackDown needs some additional talent. And I'm curious about decisions like allowing the Dudley boys to walk away from WWE, at the very least allowing Bubba Ray Dudley to walk away from the WWE, but then signing the Headbangers, even if it's for a one-time appearance. Decisions like that don't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Gag's point, the reasoning why I felt the Cruiserweight division would fit better on SmackDown is because pre the brand split, my view was that Raw should be the more casual fan base orientated show, the more family friendly type show, and SmackDown should be the more work rate based show, which has a greater emphasis on the in-ring product, whereas Raw can have less emphasis on the in-ring and more on the characters and gimmicks and interviews. And that would be similar to how it was just after the Attitude Era. If you go back to when Paul Heyman used to book SmackDown, that was very much the case, that his SmackDown was the more wrestling orientated product compared to Raw. And, you know, I thought that worked really well at the time. And, you know, it's a decision that they've made now. And, you know, I understand the reasons why they've gone with that. And you're completely right, Gags. I think it's because of the fact that they are, you know, 3 hours on the Monday night, that they need, you know, this additional roster of cruiserweights to help to flesh the show out, because, you know, some weeks those 3 hours can really, really drag, can't they? So it's good to see that.
And every week now you could have two or three guys, even if they do a tag match, right, between them, you could have something just that just blows your mind every week. Yeah. Because CWC, when you watch it, you think, what the hell? I mean, it makes a difference that the commentator team that they've got on it is superb with Ronaldo and Daniel Bryan. I think Daniel Bryan just, he's actually, I know he's not a commentator, but he does add a bit to it, I think. I think he makes it a bit different. So I've really enjoyed that. So I actually, I can't wait. I can't wait till they introduce them and introduce the belt as well, because the pay-per-views will be better. I remember the big difference in, if you go back to the Attitude Era and you go back to WCW, every single pay-per-view they did, right, the Cruiserweights killed it. The Cruiserweights were they were the MVPs. That was the match that stood out every time, was their match killed, you know, took the pay-per-view, and their main events used to be terrible. It used to be Hogan and Sting, or Hogan and Hall, or whatever, Nash, and they just used to be lying down, rolling around for shit. But the Cruisers just made a name for themselves.
And look at the talents that emerged from that Cruiserweight division. Yeah. Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio Jr., Chris Jericho, Malenko, just to name a few of them.
Yeah.
Dean Malenko. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect point. I am, you bring up an interesting point though about the commentary, and I think the commentary, despite David Otunga, who I think someone's giving him Ambien every week before he goes on the air, despite him, Ronaldo still really makes SmackDown a much better product to listen to. Now, I have to give Cole credit. I think it's gotten better on Raw, but I also think Graves. A lot of that has to do with Corey Graves. But again, you know, I know WWE is, and I know we're jumping all over here, but I just have to get this point out. I know WWE is so fixated, and they have this fetish with the three-man commentating booth. But to me, there's no reason for Byron Saxton or David Otunga to be out there. I think both of those teams would sound so much better, and the broadcast itself would sound so much better if you had a two-man booth with Cole and Graves, and then with Ronaldo and JBL or somebody else, if you want to replace JBL on SmackDown as well. Hell, just have Ronaldo call it by himself, or put Daniel Bryan out there. I think so. It'll be interesting to see the Cruiserweight division on Raw with that commentating team, be able to see how much different it is. Because one of the things I really enjoy about the Cruiserweight Classic is the fact that it's both presented like a legitimate competition, and the commentary sounds like they're shoot calling a combat sport.
Absolutely. And, that's something that, Corey Graves will, I think, really have to make a big effort on, because, you know, Michael Cole, that's not really his forte, to kind of commentate in that kind of style. And, he's been doing his job for too many years to, do it slightly differently for a couple of matches on the show. So, you know, that will be one of the unfortunate flip sides of, the Cruiserweight division moving to, Raw. But as I say,
point,
Corey
guys.
Graves is very good, and I think he'll do his best to try and put the division over and really get the matches over as best as he can.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, hey, listen, let's move on to the biggest story in WWE this week and in all of professional wrestling, whether you've been a fan of him for the first time as Kevin Owens or as Kevin Steen for more than 15 years on the independent circuit. Kevin Owens is the brand new WWE Universal Champion. It happened in a fatal four-way elimination match in the main event of Monday Night Raw, when we saw the dramatic return of Triple H attacking and pedigreeing Roman Reigns on the outside of the ring. Seth Rollins gets the cover, 1-2-3, and then Triple H enters the ring, stares down Kevin Owens, everyone expecting Kevin Owens to take the pedigree, and then he turns on Seth Rollins. Pedigrees Rollins. Now, officially, Triple H has pedigreed, by the way, all three members of the former Shield. And then, 1-2-3, Kevin Owens becomes the brand new Universal Champion. Reactions from both of you. I'll start with you, Mo. What were you thinking when you saw this?
Well, when I saw it happen and when it transpired, I actually had a lump in my throat, because, you know, I'm one of these people that has been watching Kevin Owens since his Kevin Steen days, early on in his ROH days. And even by that point in time, he had been wrestling for several years, but he was still a young kid. And, you know, I saw him evolve and develop into a phenomenal talent in Ring of Honor. Some of his matches with the likes of El Generico and others live long in the memory and were fantastic. And, you know, I always had my doubts when he was called up to, sorry, when he signed his deal with the WWE, because I thought, as talented as he is, he completely doesn't have that look that the WWE expects of their talents. And I really thought that would hold him back. And so that's what made that moment on Monday night even more special, that despite the fact he has the physique he has, that ultimately did not hold him back. And the WWE had made, you know, the bold, brave call to put the title on him and, you know, reward him for what has been a fantastic run since he debuted on the main roster some 15, 16 months ago. Ever since he started on the main roster, he's been on fire. From day one, he's been confident in terms of his in-ring. He's been world-class. And, you know, on the interview front, he's as good as there is in the company. He's so good. And, you know, we saw that earlier this year. I can't remember what the pay-per-view name is called, but the one that was straight after WrestleMania, he stole the show. I mean, he was great in terms of the in-ring, but then he was on the commentary as well, and he was just a riot on the commentary too. He's just been a breath of fresh air to the WWE. And, you know, what's even more pleasing is that it gives hope to all the young talents out there that don't perhaps have that kind of, you know, Dolph Ziggler type physique, who think, well, you know, I've not got the look that Vince likes or Triple H might like, but that's not the case. That's the past now, and that's consigned to history. Now it's all about how talented you are, and you can have any type of look you can imagine. But if you have talent, if you've got that special, something that can connect with the audience, WWE will give you the chance now. And that's one of the great things to take away from Monday night. So I just loved it.
Gags, what did you think?
I marked out. I totally marked out. I was like, when I saw Triple H turn up, I thought, bloody hell, we're going to see this stupid rehashed bollock storyline of the, you know, of Rollins winning through this. I just didn't see it. I don't know why I didn't see it, because normally I would say, ah, nah, he's turning here. But I just saw him in Pedigree Reigns. I thought, yeah, they've brought him back because maybe, you know, they know the NFL's coming. Is it NFL's coming back? Is it soon? Is it the NFL that's coming back?
Yeah, I think the season starts in like a week and a half
or so. Yeah, so the NFL's coming back. I thought, right, they're introducing Triple H again, you know, because of the ratings and all that. So I knew there was something going on, but so I thought maybe they're just rehashing the Reigns stuff, because Reigns, obviously, in Rusev hasn't happened for a couple of weeks now. So I just thought maybe a new direction. And then they rolled him in, he pinned him, and then he just picked up Owens and put him in the ring. I thought, yeah, it's just simple. But then immediately as he turned around and kicked him, the reaction. And I just love that 1 second, 2 seconds where he looked at Owens and nodded at him.
That was great.
Because the story, that's where it hooks you. You know, I was talking about the hooks. That's where you start thinking, why did he do that? And what's coming next? Like, there's something there. And you go back to NXT and your mind starts wondering, because you really want an NXT takeover now, because this is the time to do it, rather than before when it was a pile of shite. You know, when they were just all rubbish and they had a fucking faction called NXT. But now, you know, it would be something interesting if it was a war leading up to Survivor Series. But those are the things that I'm booking in my, you know, I'm doing some fantasy booking in my head. But the other bits about it was, I mean, I know there's the Owens angle and that he's won it and stuff, and it's very brave of them, because they could have gone really, they could have taken such a shortcut here and given it to Reigns, you know, because of Balor getting injured. They could have really been the old WWE that we hated. So you have to give them kudos to say, you know, and Mo said as well, that they've given it to him and he's taken that chance and he deserves it as well. And then what I loved was the attention to detail afterwards, though. So he went to Foley, and Foley was holding on to that belt, didn't want to let go, and he had to snatch it off him. Do you get what I mean? So there's that kind of, you know, there's that hatred. Well, not hatred, but you know what I mean. There's resentment now immediately between Foley and Triple H.
And the look. Yeah, and then the look that he shot Stephanie as well.
Exactly. So those kind of things that play in, they did that well, I thought. So they just got your mind going. And I understand that the importance of giving it to Owens and stuff, and he's a great heel. He can turn the crowd next week against him because he got a pop this week. But next week he can go and turn that if he wants to, and they can go in any direction. Especially if, because the question with Rollins comes up here, because there's not just the Owens angle here. There's the Rollins angle. There's what does Reigns do next, because he's going to be pissed. What do the new authority or the new leadership of the brand do, because they're pissed. So there's so many different angles and so much to think about that's what's been fucking missing for so long that you can't second you were, it was predictable. And it's changed, and now you're thinking, right, what happened before? If you all notice before the match, Rollins hugging Stephanie, like, really tight, really tight. And she didn't obviously hug him back. She was patting him on the back like a teacher does to their student, but he was hugging her tight. Is that going to lead to something, that he's pissed? Because it could be simply, that could be a simple way, but could there be something where, you know, hopefully, at Backlash, he costs another Shield member his title, and AJ becomes champion, and he's the guy that's bringing, he's now talent relations type person. He's the one that's bringing these guys in from independence and wherever, and they're getting their chance, and he wants fresh talent, and he's going to blame and say the WWE was going down the fucking pan because you lot are shit, and you need to give these guys a chance, and you're not. And that's why I've done this.
We're looking at a situation here from a storyline perspective. As far as we know right now, Triple H is rogue.
He is?
Triple H never agreed to this this brand split. This brand split took place after he lost at WrestleMania and was gone. So he hasn't been on screen at all as a character to react to any of this. So this opens up multiple different opportunities and different angles that they can go with this story.
So Rollins, what do you do with Rollins now, Matt? What do you do?
You know, it's an interesting situation because a few weeks ago Rollins was working house shows and dark matches after SmackDown, and he was working as a babyface. So they could go many different places here with Rollins. This could finally lead to the Rollins turn. This could also lead potentially to a Roman turn. But then also, if you look at this, the lines have been so blurred since they headed into this brand split and then afterwards, in terms of what's a heel and what's a babyface. There's Kevin Owens basically being handed the championship, which is a completely heel thing to do, gets a monster pop when he wins that title. But he didn't win the title. He was basically anointed the title. He was handed the title.
Exactly.
It's a very heel thing.
It is.
But it wasn't a heel reaction. It wasn't heat that he received from the crowd. It was precisely the opposite. Reminds me a lot of a Stone Cold type moment where you have a guy who is doing something like at WrestleMania 19, completely heel move on his part, but he's not going to be perceived as a heel because he's just too damn cool. Too talented. He's loved and respected and appreciated too much by the fans for you to do that. Then Roman Reigns, completely the opposite. I mean, you know, and I don't question Roman's work rate at all. I can't remember the last time Roman had a bad match, but it's clear the fans don't like Roman being presented the way he is right now. You got to go in a different direction with him, and it leaves all sorts of opportunities on the table now.
Double
to shake these
double
these
turn,
things
please
up.
Double turn it. Mo, I'm taking over here, Matt. But I wanted to just ask this because I'm. You know what? I listen to you two, so I want to put something to you to find out what you think of my booking or my head. Could if he goes this way and say he costs, Ambrose the title, a Shield reunion, a face Shield reunion for Survivor Series? Maybe I don't know because that's the next brand that's together. You know, because it'd be interesting. I don't know. I'm just, these things are going, see, that's what happens when this stuff happens, is your mind starts to think, like, could this happen? What's best for business? Where's the money?
Absolutely. And you're completely right. I mean, that's one of the great things about what we're seeing at the moment, that for the first time in years, the storylines are actually making us think about what could happen. You know, there's episodic TV where we're left with a cliffhanger kind of ending, and we're not sure what way, what direction they'll go the following week. And you know, that's what's so great to see. And you know, it was such a massive storyline development with what happened at the end of Raw, that they can go in a multitude of different directions, and one of those could culminate in the Shield coming together at the Survivor Series. And you know, that's certainly not beyond the realms of possibility, and it's almost impossible for the Shield not to be reunited at some point. It will happen. I mean, it's more a question of when rather than if. But you know, it goes back to the point that it's great to see you know, real thought and imagination being put into the booking and into the storylines, and they're getting away from very tired, predictable, formulaic booking that we had been subjected to for too many years. And the other thing that's kind of crept in recent weeks is this almost kind of, I suppose you can call it, new kayfabe, where, you know, and we've seen several instances of this where we've been presented with things where we're not quite sure, is that real? Is that going against the script? Is that all part of the show? You know, we saw it last week on Talking Smack with that infamous Miz promo against Daniel Bryan. And, you know, there's even talk this week that, in fact, from one of Matt's best people in the business, Dave Meltzer, who said Kevin Owens didn't actually know about the finish to the match on Monday night until Triple H got in the ring and said to him, go with this. And
you know when he did it, because I watched it so many times, you know when he grabs him on the floor?
Yes.
Just before he rolls him in the ring, he says something in his ear.
And that's when his eye started to well up. His eye, you know, he got teary-eyed out of the blue. And we never see that with Kevin Owens. So that was really good to see. But, you know, again, it just goes back to that slight difference in how they're trying to book things, to try and throw things out there which make people think, is this real? Is this part of the show? And it's just adding that different dimension. So, you know, that again is something that we haven't seen for a long, long time. And it's another welcome addition. And, you know, I'm really pleased to see that. And I hope we see more of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that the line really is being blurred right now. And I don't know exactly, you know, what's happening with some of these booking decisions. There have been a lot of things that have been reported. You bring up Dave Meltzer. There's been a lot of things that have been reported, Mo, regarding, you know, the Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton finish. And then obviously what we saw with Kevin Owens winning the title on Monday night, and the way Miz shot on Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack last week, and then his promo this week once again before he was interrupted by Dolph Ziggler. And I want to talk about that because the Miz's stock has been on the rise, and I've really felt that way for some months. Before we get into that, let's hit very quickly on the promo that took place on Monday Night Raw between Stephanie McMahon and Paul Heyman, because here was another thing that felt like a lot of this was really on the fly. What were your impressions of the interaction and the promo here between Paul Heyman and Stephanie McMahon, Gags?
Confused the hell out of me. I'll be honest, it confused the fuck out of me. Like, you know, Paul Heyman's promos sometimes, they're I don't know, they got two meanings. So this one, I don't know what the... Because Steph came over as I watched it the first time. I didn't really see that. Maybe it was early in the morning. I was a bit tired. I didn't really see the baby face kind of feel to it. But this time, I watched it again the second time round. I'm doing a bit of a pressing stat thing on this. Watched it the second time round. And I saw baby face type of mannerisms, you know, protecting the family, protecting a brother, you know, kind of things. But then he's kind of trying to poison her at the same time, trying to put him, you know, turn her against Shane, that she's going to be the one. But, you know, so he gets away with it. Basically, Paul at his mastermind and manipulative self, you know, best. But where does it lead? Because normally when Heyman does something or takes part in something like this, in a promo like that, there's always something further. I don't think he does something that's just a there and it's finished and it's gone. There's got to be more. And I don't know whether that ties in with what's going to happen with Steph, obviously, and Triple H, whether he's gone rogue, she goes rogue as well, because, you know, she's like, F you then. I don't know, but there's again, it makes you think. That's the beauty of it. What we want is we want to think. We don't want it to be bloody boring.
Yeah, there's a real Game of Thrones feeling going on here right now with this sort of vacuum for power struggle within WWE. Some of which, you know, when Shane returned, I think there may have been some validity to some of it as it actually being more than just a storyline. But I think they're playing with that a little bit, and inevitably, this has to lead somewhere with Brock Lesnar. There has to be some sort of catalyst that comes along and challenges Brock Lesnar and can be a real challenge to him, which is part of the thing that I sort of, you know, was taken aback by with Brock and Randy Orton is how does Brock Lesnar, I get that, you know, he just beat the hell out of somebody in UFC, but how do you bring in Brock Lesnar and have him destroy a 12-time world champion in your company? Who can you possibly present to Brock Lesnar as a legitimate threat?
An old what Goldberg. You think?
Well, yeah, but I mean, but honestly, like when you look at Goldberg and then you look at Randy Orton, it's like, well, I mean, if we're looking at this from a kayfabe perspective, how could anyone possibly convince me that Goldberg's a bigger threat to Brock Lesnar than Randy Orton is, when Randy Orton's accomplished considerably more in his career than Goldberg ever did? What do you think about that promo that took place on Monday Night, Mo?
Yeah, I agree with Gags. It was quite a bizarre exchange between the two. I mean, it didn't really make a great deal of sense. You know, Stephanie, on the one hand, is acting very annoyed that Brock attacked her brother, but then they're talking about a $500 fine. So, you know, that you know, was quite strange. And then, you know, the kind of back and forth between Heyman and Steph as well was quite strange. I mean, they certainly seem to go off script with you know, some of the ECW stuff, which was prompted by the fans heavily chanting ECW right at the start, and obviously Steph had to get her digs in there. But yeah, it was certainly strange, and you know, we don't normally see that with Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman's promos are normally very clear, very concise, very, very well delivered. But on this occasion, it left people confused. I mean, there were people even you know, front row that were just sitting there with a bemused look on their face, thinking, what are these people talking about? What are they saying? What does this all mean? It didn't really make a great deal of sense. So that was one of the few aspects of Raw that I thought was actually quite poor, which is very rare thing to say where Paul Heyman's concerned.
Yeah, I agree with you both. I was just as confused by a lot of what was going on. They were able to figure out a way to go somewhere with it. And I came away from it sort of understanding the direction that they may be heading, but the segment itself, I think, lacked a lot of continuity, especially the quality that we expect coming from Paul Heyman. And I don't know if that was because much of it was just done on the fly, if it was poorly scripted, or if it's because the segment itself involves Stephanie McMahon, who, as she's demonstrated over the years, pretty much does whatever she wants in segments, including, as I've mentioned on this show before, the time she chastised Charlotte for being a heel. So yes, let's go ahead and shoot a segment in which Stephanie McMahon steals all the heat from the biggest female heel on the roster. Doesn't make any sense at all, but then again, it's Stephanie, and apparently she can do whatever she wants in these segments. We talked about Miz earlier, guys, so let's move on and talk about the Miz. The WWE Intercontinental Champion has said a lot of things, some of which fell a little shootish on Daniel Bryan, both on Talking Smack and on SmackDown itself. He was confronted by The Miz this week. Another great promo, I thought, from The Miz. And now he's being challenged by Dolph Ziggler for that Intercontinental Championship, who, to no fault of his own, was coming off of a poor matchup against Daniel Bryan, I thought, at SummerSlam. Dean Ambrose. And Dean Ambrose, I thought, was mostly responsible for that poor matchup, and we'll talk about Dean a little bit down the road here. But let's talk about The Miz first, guys. What are your impressions on The Miz so far, and the direction of this storyline involving Daniel Bryan, of all people?
I've never been a fan of The Miz, but I was listening to you on the SummerSlam pod, and you really raised some points. I mean, when you said that he's a Hall of Fame candidate, I did kind of vomit in my mouth a little bit. I did think, what the fuck are you on about, Matt? But when you think about it, that some of the people in the Hall of Fame are celebrities that have done nothing in wrestling, and this guy has come from a celebrity past. You explained it really well, and your guest was fantastic.
Thank you.
I forget what his name was.
Telly.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I really enjoyed listening to him. So, you know, you raised the points well, because on another day, I would have told you fucking nuts, because Miz... nothing. It does nothing for me. But talking smack, which is becoming my absolute favorite, one of my favorite shows to watch, because it's just great to see stars pop in and stuff like that. And we can talk about this week's later after we've done SmackDown. But I last week just blew me away. Absolutely, he blew me away. Miz was fantastic in that promo, and I watched it a couple of times actually, just to see. And he can act. He can act well. If it was really what he felt, fair play. It was fantastic. But if he was acting, even better, because he's fucking talented. Because he made me believe that it was real, and I loved it that Daniel Bryan walked off. It added to it. Whether they're playing that as a story, it's good, because it's given him some importance. They like he said in the promo, that title is worthless almost at times, and someone needs to give it credibility, because you know these brands, if they need the titles to mean something, because then it elevates the star that holds it. It elevates the person challenging for it. It means something. I don't actually mind if they hotshot the belt sometimes, because if you go to the past and you go and look at Triple H and The Rock, for example, they hot-shotted the title a few times. Chris Jericho's got so many title, you know, he's a record holder for the internet. Is he the record holder now for the Intercontinental title, I think? Something like that. I think so, or he claims to be. But he hot-shotted it with so many people.
We're talking about the Miz, 5 times Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah, I know. What I mean is that if you do keep on changing the title holders, it does help a feud sometimes, that it becomes a bit more important. Like, you know, for example, with Dolph, if he did lose it, but then he wins it back, you know, it just adds a bit more flavor to that these two are actually Reed. Want. It adds something that they're fighting for that belt. You know, right now, they focus too much on personal rivalries rather than focusing on the belt. So they need to make that belt. And if Miz can do that in this current moniker, you know, I think his show that he's been doing over the last 6-7 months, or you know, just interviewing, it's probably helped him with his promo work. He's never been bad, but I'm sure that's helped him. And he's
well, you know, let me say this too before we turn this over to you, Mo, and kind of get your thoughts on what we've been seeing from The Miz so far. In regards to my comments of him potentially being a Hall of Famer, he's going on 11 years in the company. He's a 2-time U.S. champion. A 5-time Intercontinental Champion. He is a 6-time Tag Team Champion, a Money in the Bank winner. He was named by Pro Wrestling Illustrated in 2011 the #1 singles wrestler in the world. Tell me how, when you read that resume off, he's not eligible to be a Hall of Famer.
You're right. Yeah. You can't argue against it. He's probably got this stigma attached, you know? With a lot of people.
Yeah, which has made his ascendance to this point in his career even more difficult. The fact that he's had the career longevity that he's had in the company, and on top of that, the type of ambassador that he's been for the company while he has been accumulating all of these individual accomplishments, I think you have to look at that and say, hey, if this guy retired tomorrow, would he be a Hall of Famer? Not to mention the fact that he's a former WWE champion and main evented at WrestleMania with John Cena. When you look at all those things, you have to say, hey, listen, if King Kong Bundy is a Hall of Famer, The Miz should be considered someday.
Yeah.
What do you think of The Miz right now, Mo?
I mean, the Miz is an immensely talented guy, and you know, he's someone that has been really impressing me in 2016. As a worker, I mean, he's simply not on the level of some of the best guys in the company, like Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, the likes of them, but he's still very, very competent, and certainly far from a poor worker. He's certainly not that. He's a good worker in the ring. But what he does excel at is the personality side, when it comes to acting, when it comes to conveying, you know, whether it's anger or anything else. You know, he's superb at that, and he's arguably the best heel in the company. I mean, the way that he can rile up a crowd, very, very few people in the company can. You know, there's lots of heels in the WWE, but most are very ineffective as heels because, you know, if the fans are rooting for him and cheering him wildly, then are they really all that great as a heel? Whereas that's not the case with The Miz. I mean, he gets, you know, strong heel reactions all the time. And, you know, that's part of the, strength in the way he performs, that, you know, he's so effective as a heel. It's very hard to like him, even though you can admire the work that he does. As for whether he's a Hall of Famer, not for me. He's certainly somebody who stood the test of time in the WWE, to have been in the company for over a decade, and to have been a consistent performer, as he mentioned on Talking Smack last week. He's not somebody who misses 6 months every year with injuries. He's there week in, week out. And, you know, he loves what he does. And there was a lot of truth, I thought, to what he was saying on that promo last week. I think it's always grated on him that people hold it against him that he didn't come up through the indie scene, you know, in the likes of ROH and promotions like that, to get to the WWE. And I think that's always bugged him. And it's always bugged him also that, you know, in the past he had the likes of JBL criticize him and cast out over his suitability to be a top guy in the WWE. And, you know, he had that time 5 years ago when he was at the top. You know, he was the champion. And after that, he was buried. He was relegated to relative obscurity almost, from having been a main event guy to being opening match on SmackDown or Raw, with one forgettable feud after another. And he kept quiet. He didn't go onto websites and cut promos on the WWE like other people have done. You know, he just, you know, grinded away, kept his head down, did what the WWE asked of him. And in more recent times, you know, they've given him another strengthened push, albeit not at the main event level. You know, they've certainly been doing more with him than had been in the previous several years. So, you know, there's a lot to admire about the guy. He's very talented. He brings something different to the WWE. You know, he's one of the top promos the company has. And, you know, he brings his wife out on TV every week, so you can't complain about that. And,
yes.
So, you know, there's lots of positive things to say about The Miz. And, you know, they could do a lot worse than at some point in the next year or two, moving back into the world title picture. Because I would say, firstly, he deserves it. But secondly, you know, he's as complete a guy as there is in the company in terms of all round. When you factor everything in, you know, he's got a lot. I mean, as I say, he's not on the level of worker that, you know, Rollins and Co are, but that doesn't matter. That's not the be all and end all as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, he deserves a chance to be doing more than just the IC title run. And, you know, I think that the future for him is promising. And, you know, he's really coming into his own. He's at a good age. He's got experience, but he's in his physical peak as well. So, you know, he's certainly an asset for the WWE, and, you know, far from damaged goods like somebody like Dolph Ziggler is.
Well, you know, here's what I'll say kind of in closing on The Miz before we transition into what we've got to talk about, Seth Rollins and some of the comments that Bret Hart made recently, because I want to hear what both of you think about this. But first of all, you know, on that point, The Miz, consummate professional throughout, as you pointed out, Mo. There have been several times where he's been relegated to you know, almost obscurity. He didn't bitch and complain publicly about it. He didn't go on Twitter and go into some idiotic rant like some of the other folks that we've seen over there. He has been a professional. He's been a good ambassador for the company. And when you talk about, you know, for me, and I think for a lot of people who work in the business, when you talk about work and what makes a good worker. I think most people would back me up on this. One of the first things is, can you draw money? I think The Miz has drawn money for WWE. I think he's done it for 10 years or more. And if he hasn't, they probably would have let him go from the company a long time ago. And I think right now The Miz is doing something for the Intercontinental Championship that we haven't seen with that title in a while. He's elevating that title. He's making that title mean something. Because of that, right now his stock is as high as it's been, I think, since he main evented that last WrestleMania with John Cena. I think The Miz's stock for the company and as a character is higher today than it was when he was WWE champion, because of not only the fact that he's carrying the Intercontinental Championship and he's doing it now with some longevity, but the manner in which he's conducting himself while he does it. Let's talk about Seth Rollins now, guys, because Telly and I talked about it on the last episode of PWI, but we haven't chatted about it yet between the three of us. He was responsible, at least in part, for an injury to Finn Balor, which is going to keep Finn out for up to 6 months, torn labrum in his shoulder. And this was from another powerbomb-ish move. We saw what happened to Sting. We saw John Cena's nose rearranged in a match with Seth Rollins. And now Finn Balor is out for 6 months. Bret Hart came out, basically said, and I'm paraphrasing here, hate to say I told you so, but I did. I hope Seth changes his style before somebody gets killed. What do you all think of Bret Hart's comments and of Seth Rollins? Does he need to change his style? Is he being unsafe, or is this just a string of coincidences, Gags?
Oof, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, I don't think he's trying to hurt anyone or the styles. I mean, maybe they need to be more careful because there's a history of Finn Balor's shoulder, right? He's had shoulder problems before, so maybe these things needed to be taken into consideration. If they're going to do this hard style wrestling, they probably need to. I mean, I heard you speak about it on the last pod where they're going all out sometimes and you're going crazy. They're going crazy and doing these moves, but maybe they need to have some consideration. Like, you know, he needs to make sure his knees stay, don't buckle again. You know, they probably need to cater the matches a little bit more like that, and maybe could have been a bit more safer. But those barriers, they're kind of padded as well. You kind of think it's not too bad, but I suppose I don't know. They could do that every night and nothing would happen, Matt. And I think Finn Balor's come out and said on the Ross report that he thinks that Seth Rollins is one of the best wrestlers, if not the best wrestler in the world, and that he doesn't think that he's dangerous at all. So when the guy that's just been hurt goes on a show and says stuff like that, I know it might be, you know, it might just be to protect him and stuff, but he's not doing it on a WWE show. That's on Jim Ross's show, who doesn't have any affiliation anymore, does he? So when he's come out and said it, I don't know. I mean, Bret Hart, it's hard to argue with him as well. When you have so many examples of someone getting hurt, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good.
Well, you know, and Bret talks a lot about his 23-year record of never having a recorded injury in a match where he was responsible for hurting somebody else. And, you know, I have no way of validating whether that's true or not, but I'm going to take Bret at his word and say that is true.
Surely Kurt Hennig at SummerSlam once, he really cranked up the sharpshooter, and Hennig had back troubles at that time. I'm sure.
Well, don't tell Bret that, because I'm sure he'll.
Mo, come on, historian. Mo, that's you right. Must remember that, surely. He cranked SummerSlam. It so bad. 91?
91, that's right.
It was terrible. I thought, and you know, I hated Hennig. Hennig, when you were a kid, you hated Hennig, Mr. Perfect, the character. But
oh, not me.
You did.
Not me.
Oh, right, you're different to us.
I mean, Perfect went into that match, actually, with a back injury anyway. And I think the way the sharpshooter was cranked on perhaps didn't help that back injury. It might have even exacerbated it. But, you know, there was perhaps a wider kind of story there, in that there were a lot of wrestlers at the time who were suddenly retiring with injuries and then cashing in on lucrative Lloyd's of London insurance policies. And I'm not for one second suggesting Kurt Hennig was – exaggerating the back injury, but it was perhaps not a coincidence that he was one of a number of people that had back issues and, you know, retired or, you know, took on a very, very part-time schedule and benefited from Lloyd's of London. So there was perhaps a wider story there. But yes, I mean, and I think there was also a time when Brett went for a low blow, but it was a bit too low and a bit too flush and really hurt someone badly. I mean, nothing that put anyone out of commission, but just perhaps had him singing quite high notes for a couple of weeks. But yes, I think other than that, though, I mean, Brett, when Brett says he didn't injure anyone, I think he's largely correct on that. So that's that wouldn't be an exaggeration or a lie.
Do you think, though, Mo, that Seth Rollins bears any responsibility for these injuries, or is this just a string of coincidences?
I think he has to have responsibility. There's been far too many serious injuries in too short a time to say it's just a coincidence. You know, he injured Sting twice, and the second of those injuries ended Sting's career. He destroyed John Cena's face.
He had to have reconstructive surgery.
That's correct. And then obviously he's injured Finn Balor's shoulder, and it's quite a serious shoulder injury as well. That'll keep him out until probably just before WrestleMania.
And you know what's ironic about that as well is I was listening to Balor on Jericho's podcast a few days before that happened, and he talked about being at the Performance Center and working with Terry Taylor. And he said, in 6 months, Terry Taylor added 10 years to my career. And then that Sunday, he lost 6 months of his career as a result of that match.
I mean, there you go. It's, you know, very, very sad and disappointing that that panned out the way it did. You know, the biggest night of his career ruined by that injury. And it's very unfortunate, but it is what it is. But then you've also got the fact that Seth injured himself on a powerbomb spot last November. You know, he went for a powerbomb on Kane. His knee buckled. Obviously, he didn't intend to injure himself. That's stating the obvious. And I'm sure that that was never the case with the other injuries as well. But is it fair to say he is slightly reckless? I believe that's a fair assessment. You know, he has injured too few people, too many people in too short a time to say that it was just a coincidence with four serious injuries in the space of, what, 18 months, 2 years. So,
and to be fair, I mean, because I've taken a little bit of Twitter heat for this, I am a Seth Rollins fan. I love Seth Rollins. I've said several times on this show, on my other podcasts that I do, I'm all in for Seth Rollins. I think he's a franchise guy. But I do feel, and I agree with you, I do feel as if he bears some responsibility for this. And I think his style needs to change somewhat, not only for the career longevity and the safety of the performers he's working with, but for his own career.
But guys, so in the last 6 to 9 months or last year this has happened, has he changed his style from what it was previous? So all the time he was in NXT, before that, the Shield, there was none of this. You know, or you know, none of it that was blown up out of proportion. Has something changed in the last 12 months where he's done this? Or could it really be, you know, that they are, you know, coincidences? Because it's something that's, because if it's not something that's he's been doing, because he's been in wrestling for a while. So how do you, do you get what I mean? Is there a history of it? Because if there's a long history of it, then you can say, yeah, it's, or has something changed?
Well, and there's two things two things I want to say. Let me take this first, and then we'll go to you, Mo. The first thing that I'll say is one of the things that changed was that Seth Rollins got put in the main event picture. Seth Rollins may have been in the main event picture in NXT for a minute, but being in the main event picture in NXT is far different than being in the main event picture on the main roster and being the guy that's carrying the WWE Championship and going out every night with the pressure on your shoulders that you have to outperform everybody else on the roster.
Agreed.
So that's the first thing that changed. The second thing that changes, although I can't say definitively whether there's a history of this or not, you can go out on YouTube and you can find a video of Seth Rollins hitting Daniel Bryan with a turnbuckle powerbomb in Ring of Honor. The turnbuckle exploded. That was not a planned spot. The turnbuckle caves in And Daniel Bryan was lucky not to have his neck broken that night.
Jesus.
So there is a history of recklessness going on. And spots like that, I'm not saying you should ban them. Maybe you tease them and you have it or something like that from time to time. But what you don't do is you don't take a guy that's 52 or 53 years old and Sting and have him take not one but two of them. Mm-hmm. And if that was a planned spot headed into that match, anybody who is an agent on that match is going to look at that and say, this is probably not a good idea, Sting, which means that that was probably called in the ring. That's a mistake. If you're going to hit Finn Balor with a turnbuckle powerbomb or a powerbomb into the barricade, excuse me, on the outside of the ring, when you launch him, make sure that there's not enough clearance that he has to reach back and put his arm out to prevent his head from being busted wide open from potentially hitting it on the mat. Because even though you're launching the guy into a padded barricade, you're still launching a human being like they're a javelin. And so those are things you have to be careful with. I'm not saying the guy's completely reckless, but I am saying that if you tweak a few pieces of his style, you can potentially prevent injuries like this in the future, and you can add years onto your own career. You know, I'm no worker, but I'm just saying based on what I've watched my whole life and calling commentary for the last 5 years or so and sitting at ringside for multiple promotions, and seeing other talents up close and personal, that Seth Rollins' style tends to be a little bit more dangerous than other performers.
I can't argue with that.
Yes, I mean, it's a high-intensity, you know, style. You know, there's a lot of big moves. It's not the safe kind of style that Bret Hart employed. I mean, Bret Hart had an intense style, but it was quite a safe, grounded style that didn't feature these array of high spots that we see with Seth. You know, and that's part of the thing with these high spots is that they are high risk moves. So, you know, for Bret to compare himself indirectly to Seth Rollins is not really fair in my view either. And you know, the way that guys work nowadays is a lot more physical, a lot more high risk than it was, you know, even 15, 20 years ago. Never mind before that. But you know, to an extent, though, I mean, it's not 100% down to Seth Rollins either, because if we take the two injuries that Sting sustained, I would suggest that Sting perhaps asked Seth Rollins to work a very physical style with him. And it was, if anything, Sting being a bit naive to think that at his age, you know, he could still work that kind of physical style in the way he perhaps could when he was in his 30s. So he should have been sensible to say, look, you know, I'm a guy in my mid-50s. I shouldn't be taking spots like this. And so, you know, we can still have a good match without doing that high-risk stuff. And, you know, I'm sure Sting had a say in agreeing to those moves before the match, before those matches. With the injury to Finn Balor, part of it was Finn actually sticking his arm out, perhaps to as a kind of instinctive thing, which then caused the shoulder to land in an awkward position on the barrier. And again, you can say that it wasn't 100% down to Seth Rollins. So, you know, you can look at it in different ways, but, you know, I think he's just got to look at the moves that are higher risk and perhaps look to do them in a slightly safer way or not to do them at all, because, you know, it's not good for his reputation or his confidence that he's being stigmatized in this way. And, you know, AJ Styles is another person who, you know, we've talked about at length as being one of the best workers in the business. And we've seen that since he debuted on the main roster earlier this year. He's been fantastic. And, you know, his match at SummerSlam was one of the best WWE matches of recent years. It was absolutely off the charts. But he had a reputation going into the WWE as somebody who was very reckless too. The Styles Clash's broken necks on a number of occasions. I mean, Corey Graves is somebody who sustained a neck injury due to taking that move wrong. You know, AJ Styles about 3 or 4 years ago broke the neck of a Scottish wrestler called Lionheart. He broke the neck of Yoshitatsu in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And he broke the neck of, I can't remember, there's someone else in the last couple of years too. And, you know, he still uses that move. And, you know, it just goes part and parcel with guys working a very high sport intensive, more physical style. And, you know, that's the risk that these guys take and they accept. And, you know, maybe that's something for the WWE to consider, is to think about, well, you know, if we have too many occurrences of this, do we ask the guys to tone it down and perhaps move to a more grounded, more mat-based style, which is something slightly more closer to the way that somebody like a Zack Sabre Jr. works, which is certainly a lot less risky than the way in which Rollins or an AJ Styles works.
Yeah, I think those are all excellent points. And but I don't, you know, based on the conversation that we had when this podcast began on where the direction of the product is headed, I think the last thing we're going to see from WWE right now, whether it be Raw, SmackDown, or NXT, or the Cruiserweight Classic for that matter, is a style from any of these performers that are trying to reach the main event picture of being anything less than high risk, because that is really, I don't think necessarily maybe what the company is directly asking for right now, but it's certainly something that's expected from what they've been presenting so far and something the fans are looking forward to. Last topic before we get out of here, gentlemen, you had brought up AJ Styles, Mo, and I actually have a question from one of our listeners regarding AJ. This is from Pratik Gupta at PratG63 on Twitter. He said, AJ Styles, how much of a possibility is there that the WWE will put their title on him at Backlash? Gags, what do you think about this?
I don't know the possibility, but it should be done. This is the guy. This is the guy that it should be built around. SmackDown should be built around this guy. And if you go by the previous pay-per-view, the previous event where he beats the man, John Cena is the man. Whether you like him or not, he is the guy. And I think you said it on the previous show, it's like a passing of the torch. I think the indication here is that AJ Styles, even though he's a heel, he gets popped. You know, when he wins matches, he gets popped, even as a heel. Everything points to putting the belt on him. Every single thing points to putting the belt on him. His style, you know, he will carry the belt. And in fact, the matches will be amazing with everybody. They'll all be four, you know, minimum 3.5-star matches. And you know what? I actually feel really sad that I've only ever seen AJ Styles since he came to WWE. I've never watched TNA, and I actually feel quite sad and feel quite bad that I've missed out on a whole career here. And I've only just started watching him, and I'm just like, what the fuck, I've missed out? Do you get what I mean? So yep. I actually think that this guy is the guy. This is the brand, and I actually like it that there's none of the other guys on this brand right now, because it's going to allow him to win that belt and solidify himself as the champion and really raise the prestige of that belt up, because it needs it. It really needs it.
You know, you bring up a great point about what the title needs, because right now what I think it doesn't need is more of the Dean Ambrose we're seeing, which, by the way, I'm beating a dead horse when I say this, but why is Mauro Ranallo calling him the Kingpin? I don't know what the fuck that means. What is he the Kingpin of? Before, he was the Lunatic Fringe. Now apparently he's running rum across the border. I don't know who this fucking guy is. I don't know what his character is. And when you're the WWE champion, we've got to at least know what your character is. His work's been questionable for a while. I can't even defend him anymore. They got to get the belt off him. It makes no sense to me at all going into Backlash for him to come out of there defeating AJ Styles, retaining that title at all after the moment that John Cena and AJ had at SummerSlam, as you stated, Mo, one of the best matches in recent memory. And I couldn't agree more. I think it's the best match AJ and Cena have ever had in their careers, and they had it together. What do you think, Mo, about this? You think AJ's going over at Backlash?
He has to go over. That doesn't mean he will, but, you know, it makes all the sense in the world for the title to be put on him. You know, he's been fantastic since he debuted in January. He's easily one of the top 3 or 4 workers in the company, one of the top 10 workers in the world. He's not only very good in the ring and can have a good match with pretty much anyone, as a personality, he's very good too. You know, he certainly can cut a good promo, and when it comes to delivering on the storyline front and with angles and everything, you know, he can hold his own for sure. So it needs to move in that direction. I mean, you know, Ambrose is a good champion, but you know, AJ Styles would be a great champion. And you know, the SmackDown brand, the SmackDown roster needs that right now, because you know, it certainly feels like a roster that's thin, especially with John Cena again being off TV. There is that void that's there,
and by the way, Eva Marie being off the TV as well.
Oh, we can't forget that. Yes, I mean, albeit what, two more weeks, three more weeks.
Nikki's back.
Don't mention Nikki.
Oh, that's his girl right there. Oh man, yeah, but I do miss Eva Marie. I do miss her. I'm looking forward to her. But yeah, I mean, you're right. The roster needs it. They need a banner guy, Mo. They need a franchise guy. And with Cena being off television, AJ's got to be the guy right now. And I know you say, you know, Dean Ambrose is a good champion. I don't honestly see what's good about him. I thought the match that he and Dolph had at SummerSlam was the second worst match of the night. And I thought a lot of that was due to Dean Ambrose. I feel like Ambrose has been mailing it in. And furthermore, I feel like some of the points that Stone Cold made about Ambrose on his podcast happened to be true. This guy wants to be the guy, per se. He has to be willing to push the envelope a little bit, and he's just not doing it. And I realize a certain aspect of this is scripted, but look at what Chris Jericho is doing right now. Chris Jericho is constantly reinventing himself. He's got new catchphrases. He's got a different look every couple of months. And I'm loving what Chris Jericho is doing right now. And I think Dean Ambrose could take pointers from talents like that.
He's hilarious.
He is. Great. That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, totally agree. You know, Dean Ambrose is somebody who perhaps likes to play it safe politically. And as we've seen, you know, over time, and you mentioned Stone Cold, CM Punk's another obvious example of guys that are willing to take on the company and to say, you know what, I'm going to be a bit of a rebel. I'm going to go against your orders and I'm going to do it my way. And that's what Dean Ambrose needs to do. And that's what Austin's message was to him, that, you know, really stand up for yourself and really define yourself. And, you know, that's not something that we've really seen. You know, we can see it there, that, you know, all the makings of a really absorbing, interesting, transcendent character are there in Dean Ambrose, but you know, he doesn't quite put everything into it, because perhaps you know, he's sticking, you know, solidly to what's given to him by the script writers, and you know, he needs to be able to show enough confidence to go above and beyond that. And you know, that's something that I think, you know, the Austin podcast perhaps brought home to him, that, you know, he needs to think about how he does things. And you know, certainly if they take the title off him, you know, it'll be a chance for him to perhaps slip back down to the mid card, work on those aspects of his game that are in need of some development, and then come back stronger, perhaps for another main event run, perhaps next year.
Well, there you have it, guys. We're pretty much out of time for tonight. One last thing I want to hit on very quickly, get opinions from both of you guys before we get to our cheap plugs. It appears as if Alberto Del Rio is gone from the company.
Wow.
Once again, that's the rumor that's floating around right now, that he has gotten his lawyer to inform WWE he wants his contract made null and void, and he wants out. It'd be interesting to see whether Paige decides to stick around or not. This is the second time we've seen what appears to be an abrupt end to Del Rio's career in WWE. Thoughts on this? Gags, I'll start with you.
I'm not a major fan. I think we spoke about this before. I'm not a really major fan of his. I don't think he added much since, and he wasn't used very well since he came back. So I don't really see as much of a loss. I know so you guys rate him and stuff, but if he's not going to be used and there's no plans for him, then it's probably better for him to go and do his own thing and be happy, because it's just a horrible place to be when you're not happy at work in your day job. So, yeah, I mean, if he's done violations as well, then it's probably better for him to be somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. What do you think about this, Paul?
Yes, you know, I mean, the person that we rate is the guy that we saw on Lucha Underground Season 1, where he seemed a world apart from the character that we've seen on WWE, both in his more recent run, but also when he was doing that other gimmick when with Ricardo Rodriguez. And, you know, I agree that he doesn't really add a great deal in his current gimmick and his current role. And the whole League of Nations thing, you know, just did no favors for him whatsoever. And, you know, I can understand why he wants to move on. You know, he's just treading water. He's going nowhere in the WWE. He's clearly unhappy with being there. And I wouldn't actually be surprised if Paige follows him out of the company because, you know, she's somebody who can certainly make a huge amount of money on the independent scene for several years. So, you know, I think there's a lot more to the story than meets the eye. And I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about it in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think there are some talent who are bred for the independent circuit who can go out and make money on it. I think Del Rio is definitely one of them. There was a time in which I think Del Rio's appearance fee was something like 10 grand per show, and there were people that were paying it 5 grand per show. That's a lot of money for some independent promotions. They were paying it to get this guy to come in, and I'm sure he had been drawn for them. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to charge that amount of money. I think he'll be okay on the independent circuit. And I would not be surprised at all if Paige followed him out the door. But let us know what you think. You can tweet at the show anytime at PW_index on Twitter. We love to hear your opinions, comments, and questions. And, of course, we'll always feature them on the show. It is cheap plugs time. I will start with the Architect. Gags, you have like 20 new shows out this week. On the Index. Oh,
my goodness, it's very busy. It's very, very busy. But the only people I'm going to plug is the two guys on this show. It's number what, 33, did you say? 33, this one? 34 podcasts now since we started. It's one of my favorites. I love listening to it, and it's slowly building that, you know, that audience. So I just want to plug both of you. Thank you very much. And it's nice to see you guys on AI pods as well now on the football side. So that'll continue this season, I'm sure. So, yeah. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. And keep going. It's just getting better and better.
Well, thank you, Gags.
Thank you very much. Speaking of which, I just did Andy Wales' podcast, the Reds Review.
There's your cheap plug. Hey.
Yeah. Go check that out, everybody. Mo has a coffee table book coming out now. Is that right, Mo?
It will be out soon. Yes, that huge 1,000-page tome. Yes, it's still a work in progress, and it might be a while yet before I get to the end with that one. But no, I mean, I'm actually going to announce that I should be back writing about wrestling again. I've been on hiatus for a longer period than I should have been, but I should be announcing something in the next few weeks about returning to wrestling writing. And, you know, that's something, obviously, that I built my name on going back to the Attitude Era with Power Slam magazine, as some listeners will be aware. So, you know, I've not been writing for about 2.5 years now. And, you know, it's time I wheel out the old typewriter again and start writing about wrestling. So I'm looking forward to doing that and announcing where I'll be doing that very soon.
Awesome. Well, congratulations, Mo. That's exciting stuff. We're looking forward to finding out.
Not long.
Let me ask you right now. Are you going to work for Dave, Mo? Just be honest with me.
Well, Dave and I go back many, many years, nearly two decades, but I can neither confirm nor deny anything at this stage.
Okay. The cliffhanger.
Tease.
Oh, gosh. Well, everybody listening to this podcast, you know where to find me, at Matt Topolsky on Twitter. That's all I got to plug. Thank you, Gags, for the platform and for allowing us to do this. We will be back next week, everybody, with more PWI. Stay tuned, because wrestling is very, very interesting right now. See you next week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga.
flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.